I read that as Left 4 Dead Patch Adams Lobby Browser.
Entertained like you while you're browsing. Up, yep. No!
Games, video 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 games.
It's July 22nd, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 35.
It is 35.
Good. And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Brecken.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
Hello. So,
there's these sort of like oh, you know, these various junctions that we reach during the beginning of the episode.
Yes.
Always like,
yeah.
It's the 35th episode, and I'm Jake Rodkin.
Hello.
Yeah. Hey.
Other podcasts have like slamming music, and right. They're like, hey, how you doing? Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. We're just like, video
games. So anyway, video games.
Video games are a great way to have a good time. There's this...
They're fun and educational.
There is this great... someone made a GDC roguelike game, I think in Flash or something.
Mm.
It's like a... It's sort of in between a text adventure and a roguelike. I guess it's basically a roguelike. And you go around and you are a developer, and the game randomly chooses what kind of developer you are. And you go to sessions and like avoid fanboys and stuff. And one of the little audio quotes that happens when a fanboy catches you is, "Video games are a great way to have a good time." It's really good.
That's awesome.
I'll see if I can find that clip and stick it in here.
Video games are a great way to have fun.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought of that just now.
Because we said video games.
Yeah. We never do that, so it makes sense that I would...
Yeah.
When we finally do, right. I would think of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, just as a warning, we're recording this several days early, so if the games industry explodes or something...
Yeah, if Duke Nukem Forever gets canceled between now and when this episode comes out.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
If 3D Realms goes out of business or something,
yeah. That happened that one time. We didn't record for a week, and then like a million things happened, right. Including that. Which is like, Oh, well.
Yeah. That might happen again. Nick and I are both going to be out, and then we'll be back again. But I guess it doesn't matter, because you guys will hear us on the normal day right now as you're listening. In the future.
It's the future.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's the future of interactive entertainment.
Yep.
As covered today on Idle Thumbs. So... Let's start with what came out yesterday, Wii Sports Resort.
Well, no, it's not out for another week.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Oh.
Yeah. A week from yesterday.
Right.
Oh.
But here at Idle Thumbs.
The future is now.
Yeah. So we got Wii Sports Resort in. We played it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of games in it. There are a lot of games in it. There is
several rows of games.
There are many games.
Yep.
Some rows include a secret internal row.
So we played a bunch of them. And you guys are
many smiling men. Nick liked that. What? Yeah, we played some games, you know.
Any thoughts? Wii Sports Resort versus Wii Sports?
Ooh, head to head.
Like, which ones were good?
Maybe we could talk about how it starts first.
Oh, yeah,
which is actually, well.
Well, first hilarious and then kind of awesome.
It starts, yeah. The first thing is, please, before we begin, please watch this video. Video is 3 minutes long or something like that. Like, what? And they included an FMV sequence, like literally video of that sort of the Wii hand model telling you how to. Plug in, unplug, and accidentally disconnect and
wiggle your cords and insert them into holes.
Yeah, the Wii Motion Plus accessory, which is the thing which comes with whatever this is, Wii Sports Resort.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
It's an amazing video where it's got the first segment's like how to plug this in and attach the, you know, Wii remote wrapper thing onto it. It's like, okay, that's good. And then it's fades out, and then ba-na-na-na, how to disconnect it? Like what is this? You wait another 45 seconds or so and that's over. If you want to attach the nunchuck, like
it goes.
If you like to disconnect the nunchuck, right. What I don't understand is why they spend so long telling you how to disconnect the Wii Motion Plus. Like, why do you need to keep taking it off and on? They even tell you how to put the Wii remote back into the little gelatinous encasement. Right. Like, after disconnecting
the... slide it in there.
Yeah, the Wii Motion Plus. Yeah, like, well, also, just leave it on there. Who cares? What? Like, I don't understand.
It also did look kind of gross and a little adult sometimes. Well, it reminded me of a sex ed video.
Well, right, yeah. That or like something you'd see in like training school or like nurse training school. Like, you know, like put on the glove. Insert your hand like this.
Right. The like
very antiseptic environment, you know, just kind of creepy. Yeah, it's like a doctor's
like
office,
bleached white background, and then weird.
Yeah, sort of the hand going in through the sort of the claws. Wrist strap loop, and then the finger sort of expanding out once it was through. I was like,
this might be a horrible metaphor.
Yeah, something gross is happening. So you have to watch that when you start playing this game.
We're kicking off this podcast with a bad beer.
But it was. You'll see in a week.
Yeah.
Or you probably won't.
Well, you might.
You might.
Probably will.
I mean, you have to watch it, right?
Oh, but you don't have to buy Wii Sports. Yeah, no, you
but
can't
skip
it, but you can play it again at any time also.
That's true. Right.
Yeah, much to our relief.
But right after the safety video, it actually got kind of cool.
Yep.
Because it starts off with the opening of Half-Life Opposing Force.
Yeah.
Where it shows...
It kicks right into this.
Yeah, it literally, like, before the menus or anything, it just fades up to a me in an airplane. And then the guy's like, oh, I'm ready to jump, go, go, go. And then you just get thrown out. And then
it's
there's
like
just
the beginning of half of all video games.
Yeah, basically every war video game starts with that. But Wii Sports also starts with that now. And then you suddenly, without any instructions or anything, have to do a...
Yeah,
have to do a consequence-free skydiving segment.
The soundtrack to Medal of Honor, like on the background, which is funny because the real game doesn't have that music at all.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
The game is like boop doo 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 boop doo doo, and you know.
But yeah, this is dun dun dun. Dun. Oh shit!
Yeah,
and then you have to sort of join hands or disconnect hands from people as you skydive, and
then you fall into the beaches of Normandy and you storm.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
No one saw this coming. Yeah. Major coup for Nintendo.
And Nintendo is totally, totally right when they said they're really targeting the hardcore. I mean, they're not giving up on us yet.
Actually, perhaps a sort of cute parachute deploys that says Wii Sports Resort, and then the game starts. But
but it was pretty unexpected.
It was,
and awesome.
we were all pleased that the beginning of the game was surprising, and then that.
Especially because considering Nintendo's, as evidenced by the 3-minute ridiculous "This is how to take something in and out of a case" video, like Nintendo these days, almost all of their games start with, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of menus and tutorials, and this is how you press a button, and this is how you do this, and this is how you do that.
Yeah.
And
they just took that out of the beginning of the game and put it in each mini game.
Right. Put it in each mini game, right.
They split it up and
Well, they used their allocation of that to tell you how to put a case on a thing.
Yes.
Like, and then they ran out of allocated time. So
we gave them 3 uninterrupted minutes. At this point, hopefully, they can figure out how to fall out of an airplane. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of Wii Sports games, including...
Some of them are definitely much better than others. Yeah. I mean, that's not surprising.
That skydiving game, for instance, is really fun when it's the menu, or when it's the precursor to the menu, but playing it through... if it gets harder, it might be all right, but we ran through it like 3 or 4 times.
That's the problem with Wii Sports. Everything starts incredibly easy, and you just sort of get bored of it before it gets hard.
Right.
Unless you're really dedicated to that. Like,
before you
like
grind
tennis,
the skill graph up.
Yeah. Like, I remember playing the original tennis, and that game was really, really boring. And then I played enough of it to the point where it got hard, and it was kind of fun at that point. But,
The table tennis in Wii Sports Resort could become that, because that actually...
Yeah.
That was pretty
challenging right off the bat, actually. That was not bad.
It's one of the few...
More challenging for Jake, maybe, than for us.
Who's to say how many points I scored? Or if I won at all. But it was nice that it sort of did what I had expected the Wii Remote to do at the beginning, where it's like you're playing table tennis and you can actually... With your brain watching the TV, can put spin on a ball in a way that you would expect, or like lunge for something or slam, and it's not like, well, you're doing a sort of approximation of a slam, by which we mean you happen to swing when it was really close to you instead of when it was far away, which is how Wii Sports Tennis worked. This one actually has a game.
Yep. Yeah, that was good. It was a solid table tennis.
Solid table tennis.
Yeah.
Some of them are really impacted, though, by the low... skill level start, like the sword fighting one is hilarious because it's like, well, you start off and you've got this relatively effective kind of one-to-one control going on with your hand and the guy's sword on the screen. But then all you really have to do is just like wildly shake the remote and your guy just lunges at the enemy and just hacks at him.
No,
and
no!
Then you eventually push him off the edge and he plummets
like 100
yards down to the ocean below, which is kind of brutal. But, but yeah, I mean, I won every point on that, and it was literally just by holding the Wii remote out in front of me and shaking it maniacally and watching the guy go like a fucking maniac.
I guess Wii Sports also showed the replays, but I've been noticing them more in Wii Sports Resort, probably because they sometimes goofier. Are more hilarious because it is things like a ping pong ball hitting a guy in the face.
Right.
The sort of weird emergent things you get out of the replays are better. But in the sword fighting one, like especially when you, Chris, were playing, you would just see the guy sort of like swinging the sword over his head like an old lady hitting a guy with a purse.
With like,
but then like as the guy's
umbrella.
Falling off the cliff, you still see Chris's guy just going, like swinging the sword, but just sort of
in slow motion.
It's a weird thing. It's the best.
Yeah.
But yeah, also.
But it also, I mean, it also loses its charm after about two rounds.
Right, it was funny.
Like, well, I guess I can beat this by doing nothing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think some of those, you know, that one in particular, I think might be better with two players, but it still is fairly
basic. Is it two-player head-to-head? The thing only came with one motion plus, so we couldn't, couldn't give it a shot.
It gave the impression, I think it showed two remotes over on the side, which implied that it would let you do split-screen, like boxing.
I think like boxing it would be.
Oh, split-screen, I see. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, like Punch-Out.
So I think that might be kind of fun. But it is a lot like Punch-Out at the end of the day.
It is, yeah.
If you hit a guy, he sort of flails for a second and you
can't
control,
and then if you get hit, same thing.
Yeah,
but
so it's a very simple mechanic, but
you can also just hit him in an unprotected area.
Right, yeah.
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 I mean, I wish that it would allow you to, because the archery one allows you to start off on what they call expert mode, and I wish you could just do that for all of the modes.
Oh, I know, yeah.
All the games, I mean.
Yeah.
The archery one seemed pretty good. I had some trouble with the controls a little bit, but it's...
You were playing it backwards.
I was playing it backwards, yeah. but that's because I'm right-handed, and it just... I don't know. I was holding the Wii remote in the right hand, and I guess you're supposed to hold it in the left.
Yeah, you're supposed to hold the Wii remote in your left hand like the bow, and then you're supposed to pull back with your right.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to pivot between, but the motion controls are on the Wii remote, which is in your left hand, which is weird because I feel like for finage, I don't know. Last time I shot a bow and arrow was in Boy Scouts, but my instinct is to use the hand holding in the back to do fine turning.
Right.
With a sort of archery analogy, you don't like.
Yeah. It's the opposite of that.
You're not like in Lord of the Rings, like swinging the bow around 80 degrees to shoot the orc that's like flanking you.
Yeah.
Right.
But someone who actually knows how to shoot a bow is probably going to write in and be like, well, obviously this is a perfect simulation.
No, it seemed backwards to me.
Yeah.
But
it seems slightly off, but, it was ignoring the fact that it doesn't entirely feel like archery. It was it had enough sort of weird movements going on and precision that it was.
I mean, that was one
thing.
Of the ones that was more explicitly sort of skill driven.
Yeah,
in that you couldn't really ever get you could never win that by just sort of flailing around. I mean, it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
What else did we play? Oh, Jake did a hilarious
cycling.
Bike mode. Yeah, that was hysterical.
Yeah, it's
that seemed very.
It's
incredibly
basically
unfun.
it's like the pedaling around in GTA San Andreas, except that instead of hitting the two face buttons back and forth to pedal, you have to waggle the Wii remote and the nunchuck in each hand, and then you have to lean both of them around to steer. It was boring and tiring. The one upside, though, is that you can actually ride your guy off a 300-foot cliff, and then he falls into the ocean. This is a recurring theme.
Yes. Yeah.
In this game. It's weird that the original
Wii
games bad feature
yeah. guys plunging yeah. into the sea.
Original Wii Sports did not have times when your Miis would just plummet to their death like a Disney villain. Like, It's all over the fucking place in this game. It's weird, but it's good.
Yeah.
You can watch a guy on a bicycle plummet off a cliff, and then it just goes, displays the
Mario, like
Mario
Kart
fall
Kart
music
noise,
or stinger.
What was the, and then you guys did some kind of motor, like water motorsport thing?
Oh, yeah. It was basically wave race at the end of the day.
Yeah. Wave was that race. Fun? Was that the same control, basically?
It was pretty boring. I mean,
wave race.
You hold your hands together, you have your hands on the handlebars.
Yeah, you put the two controllers against each other, like it's like to form a giant handlebars, then steer with that. You can sort of tilt your right wrist back as if you're doing a handlebar throttle for a boost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An ultra boost.
It's too bad that that mode and the bike one aren't more like Excite Bike or something.
Yeah.
Where you're doing, you know what I mean? You're
there
more
were
active.
Some.
I got the impression that maybe there were going to be tracks that had more jumps and stuff,
I think
the core controls were frustrating for me on the bicycling one.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to do it. I also did there's a wakeboarding thing as well where you're towed from the back of a speedboat, which is kind of a California Games type thing where you just sort of flip off of a off of the wake and then sort of just wobble your hands around for a while, there's probably, you could probably do a good job. Someone might be good at it, but then you have to stick the landing and then it goes, all right, or something, and you get some points.
So you got the zombie from Resident Evil 5 in there.
Yeah, that sample also plays when you drive your bicycle guy off a cliff. The motorcycling zombie guy. Yeah!
What else was there? Oh, there was bowling, which was basically just bowling from Wii Sports.
Yeah, we kept trying to lie to ourselves. And there was like, oh, there's one more spin on it, maybe. No, there isn't. Yeah, I don't think it's the same one.
Yeah.
There were a couple other repeats. And then there were a few modes that we didn't actually get to, but I can't remember what they were. There were a couple other skydiving things.
There was a dog fighting
game. There was a dog fighting game, but that
requires...
Which
is two-player only.
Yeah, it requires two Motion Plus sensors, and they only ship one with the game.
Yeah.
Sweet. Chris is looking at the manual.
There was also Frisbee Dog. That was actually fun. Yes. I think I might have liked that one more than
See, that one, yeah, I like that one. The tennis, you know, where there were actually kind of interesting
There's
uses
a goal,
of
and like, you know, you're trying to achieve something and you feel like you can improve at it.
Yeah. Well,
you know what I mean? Like,
Frisbee Dog.
And it's also something where, you know, a Frisbee you hold with your one hand, a tennis racket you hold with your one hand. It's not like, oh, I'm, you know, flying around in the air, skydiving, and I have a Wii remote and it's controlling all of my motion.
Frisbee Dog is one that I completely blew at. I can throw a Frisbee, but I can't throw a Frisbee
Jake
Dog.
Yeah, Jake sucked my balls at Frisbee
what
Dog.
What the fuck?
He flew it, what, like, completely backwards at some point? I don't know how.
It looks like, I mean, it did make me feel like when
I throw
a Frisbee,
out of you like a rocket.
You know, I mean, you throw a Frisbee and there's a dog out on the beach that catches it. It's Frisbee Dog. He is Frisbee Dog.
They also licensed Frisbee.
Yeah, it's like, Frisbee registered like Frisbee. A trademark of Whammo or whatever.
Right, as opposed to disc throw or something.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Disc mode. But yeah, I couldn't throw a Frisbee in this game, but everyone else could. So it made me look really cool.
But yeah, Nick, I agree with you. I think the game is at its best when you basically have one Wii remote and you're doing something that actually requires one hand. Like the cycling
stuff, the bowling,
to me
the
was the most extreme in poorness in that respect. It's like you're using two hands to do something that you do with 2 feet.
Yes.
It really is not. I mean, obviously lots of games have a disconnect between the control and the and what your character in the game is doing. That's all video games pretty much.
But that's kind of not
the whole point of
Wii
Sports,
exactly.
Is to try to make you feel like you're doing essentially a simplified, stripped down version of this thing. It adds a lot to have it just be what it is.
Yep.
Also, the skydiving thing seemed to be one of the better ones in a lot of ways, except that it doesn't seem to change very much.
I think there might have been other tiers of it that we hadn't unlocked.
I hope so.
Because it was just like, grab hands with people, and then the creepy molester,
the gravity bone cameraman drops down over
there. You hold hands with people, and then when skydiving, then a timer goes 3, 2, 1, and then a flash goes off, and then when the flash goes away, you see that a me dressed in all black with a camera has appeared on screen, and then before you can get near them, they just go whoosh and just fly back up into the sky.
It's very disturbing.
Yeah, there's this weird stalker sort of...
Living in your Wii.
Yeah.
Okay, so the ones we didn't do golf.
Which might be golf.
Yeah, we didn't do basketball. Canoeing, we didn't do that, did we?
No.
Air sports, we didn't do that.
That's skydiving, and then skydiving, dogfighting, and a third thing.
Oh, right.
That was the column that contains the secret column.
Right.
Okay, so we did most of them, actually.
Yeah.
Basketball might be interesting.
Yeah.
At least,
I mean, it might end up being, oh, man, Jake was motioning dribbling. That would be awful.
Yeah, that would be pretty bad.
You have to steer with the nunchuck while dribbling the ball with your right hand. I don't know. I mean, I have no idea if that's what it is.
No, I mean, it'll tell us.
I'm guessing it's just a free throw, right? I mean, it's like bowling, I would guess.
I'm guessing it's like bowling, yeah.
The overhand bowling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean.
So I don't know. Wii Sports Resort. If you're into Wii Sports and you want more of it, you'll.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I kind of think that if this had come with the Wii, I would have enjoyed it more than actual Wii Sports. But who's to say? It's Wii Sports.
I mean, it doesn't. The Wii Motion Plus is cool, and you can tell that it adds a lot. For example, in the table tennis, but the difference between the regular Wii remote and the Wii Motion Plus is not as great as when you first pick up Wii Sports original. Like, I remember when I the Wii, God, this thing's crazy.
Yep.
The one thing, the archery game, once you get your hand or your sort of hand and brain around how it's supposed to work, it made me think that you could actually do a really nice first-person shooter for real without using the pointer, which was nice. Being able to just have the remote in your hand
without having to point it at
just
the sensor.
And just tipping it around, right. The motion of your hand translates to a sort of pivot rotation through what you're seeing.
Right.
That was really nice, and the Wii remote can't do that usually.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of the
until
whole point.
Now.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yep.
Chris is just leaping through the manual, getting all the tips and tricks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The basketball thing seems like there actually is a game of basketball.
Oh, really?
In addition to just sort of obviously the three-point contest, which is looks basically like bowling, but opposite. For two players.
We're just going to read you the manual to Wii Sports Resort.
Well, whatever. Okay, so that's that game.
How to put on the
We wanted to prove to ourselves we could play something that wasn't a wanky European PC fest.
Yep. And now that that's over, Dawn of Discovery.
Well, first, let's talk about some news stuff that happened because we didn't last week and then we forgot. So anyway, but just a couple days ago, actually, Harmonix announced that Rock Band will have a mode that allows you to create your own songs. Or not a mode, actually. It's PC software.
It's a tool set.
And plus a custom plugin written by Harmonix that will allow you to create your own tracks and then actually sell them on a store to Rock Band users. Which is pretty rad.
Sort of the Rock Band SDK, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Called the Rock Band Network.
Yep.
Yes.
And it looks like it's pretty much requires essentially a combination of PC and Xbox 360.
Yep.
Although apparently particularly standout tracks will be chosen and sold on PS3 and Wii.
Yeah, it sounds like the XNA framework is being used for some of the PC side stuff. But yeah, Harmonix said that... They'll end up just putting good tracks out over the main content stream. Mm.
But you do need the $99 Creators Club for XNA to do it.
Yep.
But yeah, pretty awesome, pretty exciting. I remember when Neversoft announced their Guitar Hero World Tour editing mode, which was sort of just basically a MIDI sequencer.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the lead designer of Rock Band 2, who I think was Dan Teasdale.
I mean, he started getting all saucy.
Yeah, yes. He was like,
we'll do it when it's
we
good.
We basically want to do it when we can actually do a good job and make it real. Like, I guess you're right. I guess waiting several months might have been the right way to go.
Yeah.
However long, I don't know, has it been a year? I don't know how long it's been. Yeah.
But yeah, the quotes now are like, we wanted a thing where you could put a real song up instead of just mushing someone else's song around and putting some dots on it or whatever. It's like, whoa, Jesus, all right.
Oh, snap. Yeah, but if you've got actual master tracks in there, you can record stuff. I mean, it's like a real actual
It sounded like, thing. I mean, obviously it was the press message they wanted to convey, but the release that went out had like a rep from Sub Pop Records.
Yes. I think Sub Pop put out their own statement separately.
Oh, was it? Okay, yeah, saying we're going to use Rock Band Network to put some of our tracks up so we can just do it ourselves. And it sounded like, I don't know.
To me, it's actually meaningful that Sub Pop put it out separately because it indicates, like, it's not just Harmonix going to someone and being like, hey, we'll give you a sweet deal. Maybe it is that. I don't know. Maybe they're getting higher royalties since they're an established label. But I like the idea that a record label sort of just sees this, likes the idea of it, and has enough confidence in it that they can release their stuff that's actual professional artists on this essentially amateur service. That's pretty cool.
It sounded like what Harmonix was hoping for was a combination of like in-house Rock Band Network people at small labels just crunching on this stuff and just, I guess, people in a band putting their own tracks out and dudes on the internet making
goofy shit.
Goofy shit.
Speaking of which, get ready for the fucking wizard because that's coming.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll try to get some stuff up on this.
Yeah, if this turns out to be doable,
we
would be stupid to not put the Idle Thumbs musical library up on the Rock Band Network.
Yeah.
I suspect it'll be a relatively time-consuming affair, but obviously I have all the,
we have the master
kept
tracks.
All the master tracks and the Idle Thumbs vault. So, should be good.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else do we have here? Oh, man.
Computers.
Alan Wake not coming to them, possibly.
Right. Yeah. After all this time.
I know. Kind of ridiculous.
Yes.
Especially now that... we didn't talk about this last week. I think it was already known as of last week, and we just forgot to bring it up.
Remedy has since issued their statement. Yeah. Which is essentially, we'd love to do it, but Microsoft won't let us.
Right. So
wasn't Alan Wake supposed to show off all the latest PC gear?
Yes, it was.
That game was announced as a PC game.
DirectX show-off
highlighted by Microsoft. Yeah. So that's pretty sweet. That's
now you know how Mac users feel about Halo.
Halo. Yeah. Yeah. And Microsoft again. It's funny that Microsoft just loves to stop in here and just
This seems more like an Xbox game.
Really?
Says executive as people get really start to sweat in that meeting and become sad.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think I could see this.
You know, what's even more ridiculous about this versus Halo is that Halo ended up on Xbox actually being a substantially different game than it was on the original Mac and PC sort of vision. I mean, it was almost a different genre, basically.
Yeah. Right.
Whereas Alan Wake, it's like, oh, I guess it's still like a first-person shooter. I mean, there's no way, especially now with how similar shooters on the PC and console are, at least mainstream shooters, I would be very surprised if there's any reason that this is happening other than Microsoft being like, only on Xbox 360. Cool box in the corner.
Like, I mean, Alan Wake has seemed like it's a cool game, but it has also seemed sort of like a niche thing to me. I mean, Halo, it seems like Microsoft from day one was like, cultural phenomenon coming up. This game's going to make the Xbox.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is like, here's a weird sort of thriller thing. It's sort of, you know, Alan Wake. Alan Wake seems really cool. I've been interested in it since it was announced. But why would you cancel one of two platforms for a game that is not going to set the world on fire?
Right. It also just kind of feels like a PC game to me from the way it
just
looks and the way it, like,
and
really
sort of tone. Yeah. I don't know.
When I saw it at E3, I didn't really get that vibe, but maybe that's because they were playing it on 360.
Right.
But I mean, it's third person.
They had
person
a custom soundtrack loaded.
You know, I mean, it's a third person game, and it, you know, I don't know. It felt to me, it looked to me most similar to something like Silent Hill or something like that, which, you know, feels like a console game.
The thing
to
that
me,
kind of interested me about Alan Wake, though, from the beginning is that it looked like a game in the style of Silent Hill, but from a blatantly PC heritage, just sort of in the sort of aesthetics and presentation
right.
of it.
Yeah.
That was my main impression of it as well, which is like fairly interesting. I'm hoping that, I don't know, I'm hoping that they change their mind about this or something. I don't really know. It's Microsoft. They are the opposite of receptive when it comes to anything on the PC at this point. Unless it's games for Windows, your favorite platform. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Christ.
I don't know. Microsoft is amazing to me. The thing that's really frustrating is that Microsoft's Games for Windows division is separate from Microsoft Game Studios at this point, basically. And so they basically have made it – they've just built essentially a stone wall that when you ever try to ask anyone on either side why the right hand never knows what the left hand is doing, it's always, oh, well, you know, we're doing our best here, but, you know, they're a different division. It's not really our thing. And it's like, really? You all make video games, like, or services for video games.
The first two words in both of your group's titles are Microsoft and game.
Right, exactly.
Team the fuck up.
Yeah. It's pretty ridiculous. I mean, it almost seems like they're both just competing against each other, except one of them is the one that actually
gets
funding. Right. Support.
No, one of them just has one console, but the other one has every PC in the world.
Yeah, I know. That's always what they say, too. It's hilarious. Really? All right, guys. Great PR.
Yeah.
You guys are clever. It's weird. I don't know. Fucking Microsoft. I'm not one of those guys who just thinks Microsoft is like out to steal your identity. And
there's
like
no dollar sign in there.
Yeah, it's not that. It's just I just think the way they run their PC business, at least PC gaming business, is completely boneheaded. I mean, I believe them when they say the Games for Windows guys are genuinely trying to do something good with Games for Windows. Like, I believe that they are, but then you cut
to the office and it's like three dudes in Microsoft's original building from the 70s.
Video games are a great way to have fun.
And, you know, at the end of the day, the thing that matters more than anything else really is just, I don't know, put a game on it. Like, make a video game for it. I mean, that's a little, I mean, it's cool that they're trying to do games for Windows, but I mean, we do have Steam. It's pretty awesome.
Right.
Like, it works quite well. I know Microsoft is probably not big on the idea of using Steam to distribute their games or multiplayer services, but, you know.
They're also not big on, you know, having games on the PC.
What games would they distribute?
I don't know. They're closing studios.
Yeah, no, I mean, at this point, they closed down the Flight Simulator guys. They closed down Faza.
Yeah,
they closed down Ensemble, the thing that's, I don't really know how Faza was doing. Faza was probably not doing very well.
Yeah.
But they were also not doing well with their Xbox 360 game. Whereas Ensemble was doing, I mean, their game sold really well.
Yeah.
And Flight Sim guys, I don't really know. That stuff is so sort of tangential to the kind of stuff we usually cover, but I mean, it's hard for me to imagine they didn't
That game still has
pretty
to
much
sell.
Ha- yeah have their market
that game
figured
sells
out.
In Best
like,
Buy.
They sell I mean, the 40-year-old guys at Best yes. Buy. I mean, there's like there's nowhere else for those guys to go at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Weird. Am I just
X-Plane?
Weird? Yeah. X-Plane. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Anyway, Alan Wake. It's kind of dumb. What else do we have here?
Command & Conquer.
Command & Conquer. Yeah. This is interesting. Actually, this is from Electronic Arts, who is actually, I think, doing quite a good job on the PC right now.
Yeah.
Taking a really interesting step that I am curious what you guys think about this. Command & Conquer 4 was announced as requiring an internet connection all the time, even in single player mode.
Yeah.
So the game will have no other form of DRM included, but it will require you to be online all the time.
Was it all the time or was it at first connection?
No, I think it's all the time.
Is it all the time?
They said
there's no offline place. You can't play like you can't play CNC4 on a plane.
Right. That's yeah, exactly. That's what everyone
that's the thing that everyone always brings up, I'm
right,
sure.
Right, right. Yeah. And the way they explained it is they didn't mention piracy basically. at any time, but you know, that couldn't not be a factor. But what they did say is they're trying essentially to really push the persistent aspects of stat tracking and a character and achievements yeah. and all that kind of stuff, and trying to tie it all together into one kind of ongoing experience between multiplayer
right.
and
they're,
single player.
They're trying to have the advantages that you get from an MMO, but yes. with yeah, but right. with,
exactly.
with a
it's
a very disconnected campaign.
Veiled, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Of,
yeah.
Is there a subscription model in place as well?
I don't think it's just
a game, but
no.
it just requires that stuff. I don't know. I think it. God, I
know
Nick
is displeased.
No, I'm actually not.
Really?
I at first when I heard that I was sort of apathetic, and then the more I was kind of forced into making it, you know, forming an opinion, I thought, you know what, fine.
Yeah,
I'm at the point where it's just like it's that or what is the alternative? I mean, they'll either institute some
Tages.
Draconian DRM or yeah. they're going to, you know, yeah. I mean, it's just. Fine. I don't care. I'm always when I game, I'm always on the internet anyway.
Right.
Who's playing Command & Conquer 4 on a fucking airplane? You know what? Like six dudes right now.
Yeah.
Like what?
I mean, people always say that, and I even saw someone say, "Man, real time strategy games, though, they're the best for the airplane." And I'm like, seriously, the one where you're using a pointer
yeah.
to click on little tiny dudes
yeah,
on a high resolution screen and move them to precise places? Like, is
also,
that really the airplane game?
If we're really gonna go down that route. Airplanes are going to catch up with you and have Wi-Fi and within
yeah.
the next 2 years, whatever.
Yeah, well, some of them already do. American
yeah.
Airlines has
some
that.
Of them do. Yeah, it's not super consistent. So
no,
you probably
get
you kicked off of your game.
Yeah,
like, but,
well, whatever.
Yeah, but no, I know what you mean, though.
I think
just
making everything require an online connection is a valid concern, but also get ready for your life to be completely steamrolled as a PC gamer if you're steamrolled. Oh, I mean, it's just persistent online stuff. People are just
yeah.
going to.
Yeah.
I would rather.
It's
yeah.
eventually going to be one of those things where, like, a CD-ROM drive or something is just
yes.
like,
yeah.
well, who
oh, yeah.
in the fucking world is playing
right.
on a PC without X? Without
and I would
an
rather,
connection,
I would
a
rather the market.
Card,
I would rather have single-player games on the PC than have the market shifts
only
even more
MMOs,
towards the
right,
online
exactly.
sector.
That's a big part.
I
of
mean,
my,
if
yeah.
this is a necessary step, fine. Because
I agree.
I just do
and I also
care.
Think
it's probably not actually necessary.
It's not necessary.
It's not necessary. But if it's going to be one of two,
if publishers perceive it as a way to. To keep making
yeah.
PC games viable,
think.
Then
and I also,
do that and make games.
Right. And I also have yes. to say that, you know, between all the different things you can do, disk check, online only, some kind of activation limit, all that stuff, being online is the one I think is not only the most acceptable, I think is also the one that not
least
only
intrusive.
Is the least in it's well, it's what?
It's the least obtrusive.
It's
I
the
mean,
least
it's,
obtrusive to you in terms of what you need to be doing, just passively being on the internet. But it's also the only one that actually does offer genuine gameplay opportunities. I mean
oh, sure, yeah.
All the other solutions, all they're doing is not being a different solution or just being
right,
something, just, you know what I mean? Being something
the,
that gets
the fact
in your
that
way.
This game knows that it's always on.
Right. It
means that content can go all over the place.
Exactly.
Just as sort of part of the game.
I don't know.
I
don't
think,
know if,
yeah.
I don't know if Command & Conquer 4 is necessarily going to be the one game that shows this off to the
they're
extreme
gonna,
extent.
They're going to stream
I mean,
the FMV sequences right? down to your machine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 200 kilobyte install.
Yes.
But it does, you know, someone does have to take has to do that first. I mean, in the PC market, that's always how it's been. At the end of the day, someone, if this is the way things are going to go, or at least some of the publishers are going to go, someone does have to try it out and say, look, we're trying this. We're going to see how, I mean, if it fails, it fails. I mean, if it fails, the only person that's going to get bitten in the ass is Electronic Arts, really. So, I mean, I think at this point,
if it fails because people just reject that out of hand, then Electronic Arts is just going to throw their hands in the air and be like, fuck it, they don't deserve shit. You know what I mean?
This is going to make me into that guy who everyone thinks is stupid, and probably what I'm about to say is partly stupid.
But you're that guy.
I know. Why am I even talking? But I was just going to say, in all honesty, I don't think a lot of people give a shit.
I honestly think
people are not going to notice. They're going to say, "Hey, Command & Conquer 4, I'm playing it now."
I know. Yeah, I think a lot of the people that do complain do so under false pretenses. I really believe that some
countless others have expressed
what, like the guy who says, "I live in like the middle of Nebraska where there's no internet," here I am posting on this forum.
Let's start a petition because it's not right that I can't pirate this game.
Yeah. Well, it's funny actually. When I was on the Gamers with Job podcasts. Gamers Job podcast a few weeks ago, we did kind of talk about this, not in context in the context of this game because it hadn't been announced yet, but there was some other thing that required internet, and someone wrote in and said, you know, where I live in a rural area, and the internet's not always consistent, and you know, honestly, like if you really are that guy, that does suck. That is an inconvenience. Sure. But I think the reality is, even in places like that, over the next several years, internet is just going to become better. I mean, internet is there.
Yeah.
Like, if it's there, it's going to improve at some point. I mean, it's eventually we'll probably have fucking free Wi-Fi every goddamn place. Like, I don't know. I think over time,
in
this
your
is just.
Brain.
Yeah. And, you know, they're always, I mean, consoles, I suspect, are going to never do that. No, I shouldn't say never. Consoles are not going to do this for a long time. You still can, you know, play a single player game on a console, but the PC.
Well, I think it's going to get more and more hampered, though. I mean, more and more sort of like whatever the next Xbox
especially
and the next
Microsoft,
PS3 are.
Yeah,
it's going to be like, oh, you don't have the internet? Hmm. Well, I guess you can sort of. You bought that on a disc? Really? All right, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it
opening
goes.
Disc hatch.
it just gets really saucy.
Christ. Inserting disc. And it can take like 5 minutes.
Right.
You don't really dedicate a lot of effort to this part of the system anymore.
You have to buy like an expansion motor to run all that.
You crank the analog stick to put the disc in. Anyway,
the front of an old car. But I do think that at least, you know, while the consoles are in their current form, I mean, if nothing else, this is something that's like
in their current form.
Yeah, before they transform into
a beautiful
Voltron
butterfly.
I think it's an interesting way for the PC to distinguish itself. I mean, isn't Blizzard essentially doing something like this?
You mean with StarCraft 2?
With Battle.net Pro.
I don't think they're going to require. I mean, at least they haven't announced that they'll require a multiplayer or an online connection for all multiplayer though. They are requiring an online connection. So,
I mean, I think it's an interesting.
But yeah, so
interesting
to a degree,
way to,
yeah. I mean,
I think it's an interesting way to go. I mean, I feel like, like I was saying, it's the only, you know, DRM or whatever you want to call it, solution that does also actually provide actively good things in addition to the maybe something that is kind of annoying for some people. But I mean, you know, while they're doing that annoying thing, they can also be doing a cool thing. I mean, they essentially have Valve-like access at that point to every data point they'd ever need about how the game is playing, like what people are doing. I mean, in a way that could be used for genuinely useful design. Yeah. I mean, I know there are people who think that's a conspiracy or whatever.
Well, from an infrastructure standpoint, it is still kind of superfluous, and it really is only just because they want to spy on you. I mean, I'm not being that facetious. You can easily have the game just log all of your data in single player and then phone home the moment you play a multiplayer game and sync your stats.
Yeah.
You're not gaining anything unless you are playing in a game where it secretly is a persistent world or something like that, and there's, you know.
Yeah.
So, in that regard, it actually does slightly annoy me because it's thinly veiled lameness. But
I guess that stuff has never bothered me because it's like,
if you have to pick
one, I'd go with
this.
What could someone use
in
a malicious way?
Take control of your webcam,
this guy's all about
the
turtling strategy.
I don't even want to get into this.
No, I know what you're saying.
I
don't mean to berate you.
It's not essential that they check persistently whether or not I've stolen the game.
Right.
They want to, so
now
they can do it in a way that sort of couches it amongst gameplay features. That said, you guys have said, well, if there's a method that someone's going to use, I'd rather have the one that also gives me a lot of really nice tangible features.
Saying. My point is not that Electronic Arts is altruistic as a corporation. My point is just that if they're going to choose a thing that is going to be something that will hinder me in some way and something that will, you know, like
if I'm
going
to take it, I'd like to take it.
Yeah,
right.
Because
here.
I mean, the reality is, like Nick said, I really don't. ever play PC games when I'm not online. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, my PC is just plugged into my internet basically all the time, or on a wireless or whatever. I mean, it's I guess if I'm at the airport one time, I'll be annoyed that I can't play Command & Conquer 4, but the practical likelihood of that happening on any
remotely... Yes, I know. The reasons behind it still bother me. But,
that's fine. That's fair enough.
But yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, and it doesn't actually bother me actively. I'm not going to not buy Command & Conquer because of that. I play plenty of games on the internet, but
right.
I don't know. Yeah. I still think the model of not trusting your customers permanently is not wholly sustainable. I think people will eventually get frustrated with it.
Anyway, Command & Conquer 4?
Yes.
We'll see how it goes. I'm curious about it. If nothing else.
That was a long, ridiculous sidetrack. Yeah, yeah. We should take a break for a second, because I don't want to.
Yeah.
Connecting the Wii Motion Plus accessory. First, you'll need your Wii Remote Controller and Wii Motion Plus. Turn the Wii Motion Plus accessory so that you can see the arrow on the lock switch. Insert the Wii Remote Controller into the jacket so that the tip fits snugly. Push the wrist strap through the hole in the bottom of the jacket. Next, pull the strap through until you see the cord. Pull the jacket over the bottom corners of the Wii Remote, gently moving the accessory back and forth. Press the buttons on both sides and insert the connector plug into the controller. If the cord gets caught, gently give the strap another tug. Be sure to slide the lock switch up in the direction of the arrow to lock it into place. Place your hand through the wrist strap and adjust the strap lock. If the strap lock has a lever, be sure to click it firmly in place. Now you're ready to play.
So during the break, I apparently expressed what I meant to say earlier about downloadable stuff, which is when I was talking about how I don't know if it's sustainable and if things are going to sort of collapse back down. I think that the fact that there's so many competing independent systems is what is not sustainable. And I think...
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't want
to... versus Impulse versus EA Store versus...
Yeah, just and versus 300 million other DRM small retailers types, and DRM things. I mean, I don't mean to say that we should like collapse the ability to do independent sales, because I think that's important, but the fact that there's a billion closed systems and I'm rambling again. It's going to make me sound like a sort of open source dork, which isn't what I mean, but I think that until there is a unified, if it's not an open service, a sort of open protocol that everyone can adopt,
I think
it's just not going to work, because like the analogy that I used a few minutes ago was like to watch NBC content on your TV, you don't need to get an NBC account and give them your payment information. And then like, oh, and from then on, every NBC show comes to my TV. It's like, you just have a TV and it shows up.
Right.
And I think the internet analogy to that literally is Hulu versus all of the, like there was, for the first year or two of online video streaming, all the networks had their own shows on their sites and it was moderately successful. And now there's sort of one brand that you know has all the content from all the major networks on it. And I think that would probably work whether or not there was Hulu.com, or if just everyone said, also, you know what Hulu is, we have that. And right. I think that sort of thing, as it stands right now, there's no way realistically that it's going to be XBLA. There's no way it's going to be Steam. There's no way it's going to be Games for Windows. There's no way it's going to be OnLive.
Those
or
are
Impulse.
All hosted by companies with entrenched interests.
Exactly. I mean... Hulu as is also probably not fully sustainable, because it's to get your content on Hulu, it seems like you have to buy into a huge percentage of the company. Like Hulu is owned by Disney, NBC, and Fox.
Well, at that point, do you think it would be a smart move for Steam to just split off? I mean, weren't we talking about this?
Yeah, we did talk about it a while ago. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that it wouldn't be surprising if they tried that.
Yeah,
possibly for that reason.
Yeah.
But it's. Stuff as it stands now is cool, but I think if people want it to actually work, they're going to need to get more smart.
Yeah,
sweet.
Video
there you
games.
Go. Knowledge dropped sweet. By Jake.
Yeah, knowledge bomb.
Or a fart.
That's what I dropped.
Yeah. All right.
A knowledge deuce.
Moving on to video games, I guess.
Idle thumbs. How do you get the poop in there?
We don't talk about poo that much. We haven't.
We talked about poop in the Wii Sports Resort.
Did we talk about poo during Wii Sports Resort?
Yeah, we did.
Really?
Yeah. There was a poo thing.
What was the poo thing?
I just remember thinking, oh, here's another poo thing.
Another poo thing? Oh, God.
Like, I mean, I remember talking about, like, a glove. But that was...
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the inserting of the...
No, that was just... No, I'm talking about, like... I'm talking about, like...
No!
I'm talking about, like, episode 4 or something.
No! Poo!
What's wrong with us? We are children.
Yeah. Okay, so Dawn of Discovery. I want to talk about slash Anno 1404.
Right, back to our...
I want to talk about this because... Yeah. Back to him.
Basic strategy.
Yeah.
And now it's time for...
Puffing on a pipe at the moment.
You're puffing on a pipe?
Yeah. Just saying.
You're puffing Island Adventure on a pipe?
Not to correct, but to supplement last week's somewhat bumbling attempt...
I played 20 minutes of this, and we're going to...
I played 20 minutes of this mode, and you played 20 minutes of that mode.
Right.
Combined, yeah. We have...
Yeah, I think that's, we may have spent more time talking about the game than you guys each individually spent playing it.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
That kind of thing actually ends up always freaking me out in retrospect, because during the week, I got several Steam messages from people who were like, oh man, Dawn of Discovery has bought this because you guys talked about it on the podcast. And I'm like, oh God, we're not informed. We don't know what we're talking about.
I played it, then I sat down and recorded a podcast about it.
But I'm actually no longer uncomfortable about that because I've played it quite a bit more since then. And I'm completely confident now in recommending it full-heartedly.
With
my full heart.
Care Bear.
It's really fun. It's, you know, the basic structure we discussed last week is what it is. It's, you know, it's a essentially city building game where you can colonize out the different islands, and it's very economically driven. So most of what you're managing is the relationship between the things people want and will keep them happy, the things that will allow them to progress in society, stay upwardly mobile, and managing all your production lines to make sure you're not over or underproducing those things. And it's surprisingly fun, mainly because once you actually get all that stuff balanced out, it's incredibly rewarding. It's a little different than Civilization or something in that you're always kind of working up to these very discrete tiers. So you start off with just peasants. Eventually, once these peasants are happy enough, and once they have enough physical goods that they need, different kinds of food and faith and community and things, then they become citizens. And after that,
and then they have their own new set of requirements.
They become patricians after that, and it keeps going. I don't know, 5 levels or something.
Yeah.
And each one you can choose to essentially just hold at a certain point. You know, the guys won't progress unless they have low enough tax rates to want to move up into the next level. And so you can keep the game at the pace you want just by adjusting your tax rates, which is really helpful. It's just a one-click global setting for each tier. I didn't get that actually when I was playing the game last week, because last week I was playing the campaign. The campaign's really good. It's level-based, and so each level you start your civilization over from sort of a fixed point. So roughly speaking, the place you ended one mission is about the like historical point where you start the next one, but the game starts you with, you know, a pre-designed version of it. That was really irritating to me at first, because I wanted to just keep my consistent civilization and not lose all the time and work I put into it. In retrospect, I realized that was the right choice in campaign, because actually, as someone who was brand new to the game, by the time I actually finished a mission, my cities were so precariously balanced that I would end up, it's sort of the equivalent of like sprinting to the finish line at the end when you're sort of already actually collapsing and like,
right. Or like it's like the last seconds before you're dead in Tetris. I'm like, oh shit, exactly. oh shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
or like running a marathon with like a big pile of ceramic pots or something.
Right. As long as you get over the finish line without them broken, you just fucking throw them everywhere like exactly. 2 seconds later.
Exactly. That's what the campaign is like for me in this game. But going through, I didn't play through the whole campaign, but after I played through enough of it to feel confident with the game's mechanics, then I went over to Endless Mode, which is what Nick was playing, which is a standard game like any other game like this where you just go. And I was much more confident. So that's actually the route I'd recommend, playing through campaign until you feel confident enough in the mechanics and then switching over to Endless Mode. But it's really fun. I've really been enjoying it. And I do, we mentioned this last week and it remains true, but I really think the, and this has been in the game since the last version as well, the, close up camera mode with depth of field and, all the nice effects and removing all the interface elements, being able to go in that as your city grows and sort of higher classes move in and buildings get upgraded over time. It really, it's surprisingly effective in terms of making you, want to keep getting that stuff better and better. And it's a real great visual payoff.
Speaking of that, it's maybe not speaking of that because I don't know how the game works, but it's last week you talked about it as being entirely sort of Europe focused, but it's not really looking at the screenshots, right?
I did that too. I was looking at screenshots. I noticed there were some sort of Middle Eastern.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. The game, actually, this ties into one of the things I don't like about the game. This part I do. It's cool. You've got, you know, it's very exaggerated geographically in a civilization way where it's like, oh, I guess right over here is this other island that essentially represents an entire, you know, city or
it's
country
Arabia.
Or like city state essentially. So you can colonize the east, which basically means the lower half of the map.
Right.
And it's cool because actually the sort of European-esque cities and the they call them the Orient, they have different things they can produce, and they're actually interdependent. So your citizens actually need spice to progress because they need their food to be, you know, of a higher class than what the peasants eat. And so you actually need to import spice from your either from your own Oriental settlements or by just trading with you know one of the Orient guys. And it's really cool. I mean, and it works both ways, you know. So I mean, there are different things that those colonies produce.
Can
that
you play as either side at a certain point?
Yeah, you play as both. You okay. start off as a European colony, and then you can set out with your ship and build
and pillage.
you can just create your own, and you can get different. You can befriend one of the viziers or whatever, and then he'll give you. The option to make better Oriental style buildings, and you can get nomads to move into your place. It's pretty cool. I'm playing as an extreme pacifist because I just like building the city and just.
I was going to ask what the combat.
Yeah, I don't. I've only done a little bit of combat. It seemed like it not really what the game was about.
Yeah.
It's got a whole castle sieging thing and
oh, really?
Stuff like that. Yeah, I didn't play into it too deeply because it's not really what I'm interested in from this game. But it's there. I don't know.
So what's the thing you don't like?
The thing I don't like is that there's an odd choice with this game that seems it's like almost historical, but not really. It's all sort of just vague, kind of made up stuff. That's like there's, you know, in the campaign, for example, not in the I don't think in the Endless Mode, but in the campaign, there's essentially a Jeanne d'Arc character who's just kind of a Joan of Arc character whose name is Jean to something else, you know, and it's all these things like this that are just these weird little pseudo parallel historical things. And then there's weird, like there's, I guess, a hut of witches who just kind of hangs out and you can like trade with them and just little tiny little things that are just slightly like supernatural where it's like, oh, I guess you can get a protective spell from these things, but like nothing else in the game is like that. It's kind of irritating to me. I kind of wish they would have just stuck with one, you know, it's like just go all out, make it crazy, your own fantasy world, or just make it Europe. I mean, I don't know. It seems it's that's really
instead of the witches sort of contain the cheats page for this otherwise normal game.
I didn't really interact with them because they kind of annoyed me, so I don't really know what they do. But when the game said you can buy a protective spell from these witches, I was kind of turned off by that. But it's pretty minor. It doesn't really affect the game in any major way. I was irritated by it. I really like it though. I've been having a lot of fun with it. Nick, you didn't play it anymore, did you?
No, not yet. Yeah.
Because you hate it? You think
it's
garbage?
It's kind of a baby game.
It's kind of a baby game.
Yeah.
It seems like it could get really hard.
I don't know. I'm still not convinced it's going to be my kind of game. But
yeah, that's fair enough.
We'll see.
Yeah. I'll give it another shot. It does seem more like a baby game, like the kind Chris likes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, sort of namby-pamby, sort of European.
Kind of trading. Yeah. And, oh, hello, my lord. Here's your spice. I don't know. I need a cannon or something.
Oh, God. You need a cannon? You can build ships with cannons. There's sea battles and stuff. Yeah.
All right. Well,
maybe. I took a bunch of screenshots.
I've been playing Battlefield 1943.
Yeah, you still playing that?
Yeah, actually.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of a little bit addicted to it.
Nice.
It's actually really good.
That's good.
Yeah. I have nothing new to add, though.
Okay.
I mean, they released that new
still
map.
Still fun.
But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, all it's right. still fun.
Good. I downloaded a bunch of people contacted me to say that GOG.com has Castles and Castles 2. which I briefly mentioned last week. And yeah, you can get it for, it's like $7 or something.
Yep. You got like
$7.
5 minutes of Castles 2 in right before we recorded this podcast.
I played a little bit of Castles 1, then a little bit of Castles 2. And it was my, especially with Castles 1, the thing that it, I'm sure everyone's had this experience if you've been playing games for a long time. It really reminded me of what, how different games are in terms of accessibility between now and 15, 20 years ago. I mean, you load up Castles and it's like, oh good, here's a big green field and a cursor. And like, start building. And the game doesn't tell you anything. It gives you no explanation. Presumably, there's a PDF manual that I could be reading. But, you know, it's just, you'd never see that now. That would never happen. And it was very intimidating. And it's always strange to me when I experience that. Because it's like, I was a kid when I played Castles 1, you know, and it's like, I did it. I figured it out. And now, as an adult, I'm just like, well, this, well, oh, ooh, sheesh. This is confusing.
Where do I click?
What am I doing? Yeah. Someone give me a little man to pop up and tell me what to do.
It's kind of 3-minute instructional video.
it's tough to...
How to use a keyboard. Yeah.
Yeah. Castles 2 is a little less,
that
crazy
sweet
like that.
CG opening.
Yeah. Castles 2 has some hilariously great...
Up to 4 pre-rendered spotlights.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome. But Castles 2 actually seemed like it might still be pretty playable and fun, actually, based on my very short experience. So I'll probably load it up.
You already had a castle going there after just a few minutes.
I forgot. There's all these cool history. I mean, you know, for people who are into castles, I'm not.
Oh. Nick's into castles.
No, I forgot. No, I was just going to say some news that came out in the middle of the week was that.
Castles 3.
No, Lords of the Realm was.
Oh,
was
yeah. Rebellion.
By, yeah. Rebellion ended up buying games. All these intellectual properties from the Vivendi.
Yeah.
In the
fire sale,
Activision
I guess.
Blizzard. Yeah. Yeah. And they're apparently looking at developing these franchises. I don't know how realistic it is that they'll be developing titles in every.
I assume they didn't buy them just to sell them on GOG.
Well,
that would seem kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever see, you know, specifically a new Lords of the Realm game, but it'd be pretty cool if they actually did put out a new.
For those who don't know, they bought Evil Genius. That was actually a couple years ago.
Yeah.
They bought Lords of the Realm. They bought Ground Control, actually.
Yes, Ground Control.
That was Massive Entertainment, which is now owned by Ubisoft. So it's interesting that Ubisoft didn't. I guess they weren't the publisher, Vivendi was. So there was that. I think there was something else.
Yes, there was, but I can't remember what it was.
I don't remember either. But it was interesting. It's an unusual move. Rebellion's a UK developer. It's kind of one of those few remaining sort of mid-size independent developers.
Yeah, Aliens vs. Predators guy.
Aliens vs. Predators, right, exactly. Yeah. And they're making a new one. And they're also making Rogue Warrior, we're not so crazy about, I don't think. But
no.
I'm curious to see where those go. I remember playing Evil Genius when it came out. That was 2001 or 2 or something like that.
Yep.
It was pretty fun. That was interesting.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about League of Legends?
I could.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say one thing about it. That, you know, if people don't know what Dota is that Warcraft 3 mod. I don't know. We've talked about Dota before on this podcast.
Yeah, Defense of the Ancients.
It's Defense of the Ancients. It, you know, I don't want to get into specifics. I'm just going to very simply say that if you're looking for a Dota game to play that is approachable but also has depth, I would look at League of Legends possibly because they're doing some really smart things about how to introduce new players. I mean, initially when you start out in the game, there's almost like a tiering progression where you play against bots first, which is cool because I didn't assume that they would have bots in this game.
Yeah.
And then you go from that into playing with other humans against bots, and then you play in just like regular practice, sort of like unranked matches, humans versus humans, and then after that, you can sort of get
into the Warhawk. What about orcs versus humans? Do they have that?
No, I don't.
Bullshit. Not buying it. Sorry.
It's probably an orc in this game.
Yeah.
Probably.
That one guy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like one hero dude.
The heroes are so weird. I didn't really play Dota. Is that what they were like in Dota as well? Just completely seemingly unrelated, like wacky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It's not really, doesn't bother me at all. I think this game's quite fun. I've played it several times.
Yeah.
But it's odd. I mean, there's like a little girl and like all, it's just like weird.
Some of them are, League of Legends is certainly, I think, more stylized and going for that more kind of goofy, cartoony sort of
approach.
It is LOL. Yes, it is.
But what you say about accessibility, I think, is probably makes sense because this, you know, Riot Games, the developer, does have some Blizzard, ex-Blizzard guys.
Yeah.
They've got Steve Snow, who was, I want to say, co-founder or at least early member of Gas Powered Games, which usually tries to do some element of that in their games. And, you know, they seem to have a core of people who come from that kind of background.
Yeah.
Which Dota is infamously not that.
Right.
At all.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons I never got into it. Those mods often have that problem where...
And the community involved in these games is not the most helpful.
Right.
They are very hardcore. Yeah. They're more concerned with playing against each other. They don't really want to deal with you.
Yeah.
they don't want to help you
at all.
And by
that, you mean me.
Yes.
Specifically.
Right, yeah.
They don't fucking want to deal with my bullshit.
No, no.
absolutely not.
Definitely not. I mean, I was playing a different Dota game, God, the community.
Are we allowed to talk about that? Or
no, we're not. Okay. But I'll just very quickly say that it was the worst online experience of my life.
Oh man,
it was just. I mean, the people that I ran into were just the biggest. Oh God, I'm
someone,
not even.
Someone apparently is impersonating me in that game right now.
Really?
Yeah.
It's me.
Oh good.
I was just trying to get people to like me. And yeah. But then they're like, oh, it's that guy who doesn't know how to play games.
I heard that guy
what an
sucks
idiot.
At video games.
Yeah.
Fuck you, man. Get out of our cool game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do some reader mail.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Reader mail. Two.
All right. So,
reader mail.
I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm sorry. Guillard Defree Perez. I'm sorry if that's wrong. Writes, so, did Nick come back to play Empire Total War? I've been having a blast playing it after the 1.3 patch. I've never played a Total War game in depth, just the demos, but I've found Empire Total War to be completely awesome and streamlined. Congrats about the podcast, easily the best one on the interwebs. Cheers. So, Nick.
I did load it up
once.
Yeah?
Did you beat it?
No, I ran into some of the same performance issues that I was
really?
Having before. It was better.
Yeah?
And although... I think they did actually fix the game-ending bug that was killing my
your 106
save.
Turns or whatever.
But it's just that event was so crushing to me I can't bring myself to go back. I'll go back and I will be addicted to that game in like a year or something.
Right.
You know, I will. Yeah.
You'll
kind of
be sitting around and you'll be like, oh, I'm playing Total War.
Oh yeah, that game.
But right
yeah.
now, it's still too soon.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's, honestly, emotionally, that's
too
where
soon.
I'm at.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's fair enough, I suppose. It's not like there's any shortage of stuff to play. Trevor Smith writes, hey, Thumbs, during the 4th of July weekend, I went to the ScrewAttack Gaming Convention, and it kind of blew my mind. It was its first year as a con, and I was impressed by how much work he went into it. So he goes on, describes this for a while. He says, almost every game being played was a fighting game, the main two being Street Fighter IV and Blaze Blue, which had just come out that Tuesday. Upon seeing this, a question dawned on me. Why does it seem that the only competitive games played anymore seem to be fighters? Is it because they create tension that makes them entertaining to watch? Is it because the players see it as a type of game where they can show how good they are because it's head-to-head? What are your thoughts on this? Also, I was watching all the Metroid commercials, and during the third Metroid Prime 2 commercial, I saw this. You're going to flip out from IGN.com. Sweet. We'll always take more IGN.com quotes. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily about the fighting game thing. Yeah.
Either. I mean, in terms of competitive gaming.
Games played in a con like that? Probably yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
you can do them split screen.
But you
locally.
Know what? Yeah. What at PAX last year, what did they play? Was it Battlefield, I think, or something? There's a big, you know.
I don't remember.
I mean, things like PAX and
QuakeCon. QuakeCon, but also, I mean, StarCraft in Korea. I mean, there are a lot of examples of competitive gaming that aren't fighting games.
The StarCraft thing, a friend of mine who listens to the podcast got back into StarCraft in the last couple of years, I think, and he was telling me that he was watching YouTube clips of StarCraft matches from about a year and a half ago, and then watching ones from now. And he said he was completely surprised that people are still actually changing and refining.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Oh yeah,
professional
no.
StarCraft.
Sure.
Tactics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah.
That's
actually,
awesome.
Yeah. I mean, GOM TV is still really interesting to watch for that reason. Because
it is GOMTV.net. By the way, it's worth checking out.
Yeah, they're still.
Yeah,
I mean, like
people are still figuring out new ways to get better.
The
at StarCraft.
Old veterans have actually, you know, sort of been eclipsed, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, that's interesting.
There's like a generational thing.
I remember years ago, I never followed that.
You threw old man.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true.
Yeah, the kid's
it's
like,
true, though.
It's like a 19-year-old kid. Just
yeah, no, but it's true because I remember years ago, I never followed this scene very closely, but there was that guy Boxer.
Yes,
probably he's probably
he's the
you know
best
among
example,
people
yeah.
who have heard of a StarCraft player, he's probably the most commonly known one. And it was funny because I was watching the GOM TV stuff last year. late last year, and the commentator, Tasteless Nick something, I forget his name, he was talking about, oh, here's Boxer, the old pro, and old now Boxer's like in the army or something, and he plays on the army team that he like started an army team when he joined the military for like other sort of former pro StarCraft players who are now in the military and I guess don't have as much time obviously to practice and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was so funny because he's like 25 or something.
Right. And now he's being like beat by the kid like
prime.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
before
that's also,
I could speak, I was playing StarCraft.
Yeah, it's like, that thing where it's like, oh, Boxer, man, you know, he may not be technically the best, but he was the most spontaneous. He had that whole part of his game that was just,
I love
you
know, that.
Which is just like,
I love that you can talk about those
man,
guys.
Man, that's
like
so
that.
Weird. It's like,
I know.
It's like a, he could be a
so
basketball
the fact,
player.
The fact
or
that
something,
this conversation exists means that fighting games are not the only games still played competitively.
Sure. I mean, I think probably, you know, PC and console have different skews in that way. Like, the console probably skews more towards fighting games. Obviously, there's, you know, not much of that on the PC. And then RTS on the PC seems more so almost than FPS.
Yeah, but
these
FPS
days.
Is,
but FPS
is the
is
second
still,
thing.
I mean, Counter-Strike is huge in that stuff.
You know, people talk about it a lot less than they used to, though.
That's true. Yeah, that's for sure. And on the console, I don't know. There was the, I mean, Smash Brothers was in one of those leagues. And I guess that is a fight against all. And then Halo
Defense
was
of the Ancients,
also.
I mean, if you go to BlizzCon, I mean, it's all...
Yeah, I was going to ask. Does that game have a pro?
Yeah, yeah, it does. Yeah, it's pretty...
there's some
pretty
pro Dota.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I mean, it seems
there's
like the
really
kind of game that attracts that kind of person, for
oh,
sure.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. It's pretty intense.
But in terms of actual public spaces, especially it's like a con, I would imagine you probably are only ever going to see... things like fighting games easily, unless there's a BYOC
or split
section
screen,
or like split screen Halo
shooters.
Or something.
You know what?
Yeah,
you know what else though that probably gets overlooked is stuff like Guitar Hero, where that you know there are like little.
What?
No. I mean, people, you know,
Pigglehead
on a smaller scale, but there are those like bar, you know, like it's Guitar Hero, and
true.
They have competitions, and they're like best players in the world.
No,
see the thing?
I like
the,
like we'll on one hand poo-poo the concept of pro gaming, and now we'll also poo-poo the concept of competitive Guitar Hero.
I guess the reason I bring it up is because the difference between those things is that unlike those other games and unlike other competitive
like Guitar
sports,
you can just,
is a fixed 100%, like, you can solve this
there's,
in Guitar
Yeah,
there is
I mean, no way to, like, show off your, like, extreme finesse and technique for how you master a song.
And there's no way to, like, ever be able to improve beyond that theoretical perfect.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah.
I guess I just see that as a less interesting competitive.
It's
more
it's less
just,
interesting,
like,
but I think it's still
who's
valid.
Practiced
I mean, I
this
think
one
I,
song better. You know, that's not, like, it's...
Yeah, you know, it's the video game equivalent of karaoke.
Right.
Yeah. And I love that. I mean, I love those games. I think they're great. I don't in any way think they're not real games or anything like that, because I know some people do have that opinion. But I just mean as a competitive thing, it seems a little less interesting to me.
It's less interesting, but I think it's still something that exists.
It probably still exists, yeah.
I mean, there are best players in the
probably.
World.
Probably.
They said,
prove it.
Well, there's high scores, but that's, to me, different than competitive. You know what I mean? Like, there's the...
What? Did you see The Wizard? That's all about fucking high scores.
But I mean, like, all the King of Kong stuff, like, that's awesome. I mean, that was a sweet documentary, and it was really fascinating. But to me, that's different from competitive gaming. That's, like, to me, a high score... Like,
it's
beating
not,
a high score is different than...
You couldn't construe it as a sport, but I think it's still a valid competition.
All right.
Because I think that person still has to perform to a level that it's not like, oh, I just, you know, I practiced this for 15 hours and I'm going to do it great the next day. I mean, like those guys who are like right up there at the top are pretty ridiculous and they don't always.
No, I'm sure. I'm just saying.
I know what you're saying, though.
I'm just saying
it's not
there's
spontaneous.
Less actual
it's not
direct.
Like,
I guess I'm talking about simultaneous
talking
competition
about stuff.
Versus right. I guess that's mainly what I'm talking about.
So like golf is not a sport. An archery.
All right. Fine, I'm
good old
shit.
Golf argument.
Yeah, golf's interesting because golf, I guess, there is actually also a perfect theoretical.
Yeah. I mean the same thing with archery or shooting.
Yeah. All right, so maybe I'm full of shit. It still seems different to me in some way.
It's no, different. It's for sure different, but I think it's still.
I think they're the same thing. The, you know, the Nintendo.
Right. We should move
circuit.
On to another question. Cheeto Hands, who I recognize as recently signing up for the forums, writes: Chris, Nick, and Jake. What's up, guys? I love your show. It's the best gaming podcast on the Google. I started listening to Idle Thumbs 8 for old time's sake and realized you guys predicted Project Natal during the show.
Awesome.
Are you aware of this?
No.
I'm not.
We're joined today by special guest Tim Langdell, who is here.
Yeah.
So he continues.
Did he, like, quote us or anything? I mean, what?
Well, he continues. He says, I'm guessing you don't go back and listen to your old shows.
Nope.
That's what the fans are for. It occurred at approximately 3 seconds after the 30-minute mark. 3003. Is there something magical or wizardly about that number? Are you in reality a trio of future seeing seers? If so, please tell me if Nintendo will ever ditch their friend code system. You guys make my week. Keep up the great work. Your fan Cheeto Hands. All right, so let's dig out that clip. see what we said, because we have no idea what it
was.
We
might just be set up, and then we're going to hear this clip that's just like, the wizard! Like, yeah. What? Yeah. I guess, thanks, Cheeto Hands. No, yeah. Let's listen.
Wizard!
There was no Tony Hawk this year. But it's back! Yeah, and the one quote about Tony Hawk, the only detail about any of these games was, you won't be playing this game with a controller in your hand.
You'll be playing it with...
Jake just had a great pained face there. Yeah. For those. Yeah.
Tony Hawk was really fun when you could play it with a controller. So we're changing that and making it so you have to use the Wii Balance Board or...
Or the Xbox Live Vision camera.
Right, exactly.
Like you're in the movies, but like
right, it's like fucking... air skateboarding. It detects that you thought that you know might have been doing a sweet ollie.
Nick is flailing
Nick
around,
looked like a barrel of monkeys, trying to imitate doing sweet skateboarding moves.
Oh, man.
He's still doing it.
He's not stopping.
Yeah, a real skateboard. Yeah. So yeah,
man. Yeah,
I can't.
Hot scoops dropped at the massive.
Okay, so there it was.
Wow, that's amazing.
Actually, speaking of friend codes and Project Natal, should we talk about pedophile detection, or should we just leave that for...
Go ahead.
Oh, that's all that it is.
The vitality sensor.
If you're wearing the vitality sensor and Milo shows up and it detects your heart rate quickens, then the new Microsoft system will switch over to a friend codes mode to prevent you from friending
children. To stymie the pedophiles, right.
Yes, so get ready for that. That's the actual future of games. We're predicting that now on this episode.
So mark down this timestamp here. Because it's coming up. Another name that I cannot pronounce. I'm so sorry. Gisla? Hakaled Sater. Oh my god, I'm so sorry. I feel like an asshole when I don't know how to pronounce people's names.
You are an asshole.
I know. Idle Thumbs, thanks for a great podcast. I read your site back in the day. Cool.
But won't anymore.
When you sometimes publish great stuff. Been listening to the podcast over the last months, and it's also sometimes great. I like the point you made about Doom being the first PC game we all talked about playing. It was the same in my area. Everyone played it. Never thought about it that way. My question, your podcast is running too long. Seems like it's getting longer each time. I've got things to do. Come on. Are you aiming for a set episode length, an hour maybe, or are you going to talk forever? Keep on getting to work. Best wishes and wizard from Norway. We have been getting a bit long. We'll try to cut down on that.
We want to be an hour, but sometimes we just can't stop talking about games.
Yeah, we fucking love video games.
But we're lukewarm on Norwegians, apparently, after that.
WEW writes...
I don't know what I'm saying.
Extreme Stronghold Castration Dungeon for babies kind of exists. Well, sort of. When you mentioned can't beat it in 20 minutes, it just made me think of the weird freeware S&M-inspired platformer Mighty Jilloff, which actually has a hidden second course for players who clear it in 12 minutes or less. It's similar to the old NES game Mighty Bomb Jack, except with less explosions and more dodging of angry spiders and pillars of flame and lesbians. Just a random shout-out for a strange game. Love the show. Hope whichever poor bastard reads this enjoys the game. Thanks for the free entertainment, guys. WW. Mighty Jilloff. I've known about that for ages, and I should download it. Sorry about that, but yeah, good recommendation to get out there for people. There's that. What else do we have in here? I did play Bomb Jack actually on the, I think, Virtual Console. I played it. All right, Ryan Arnold writes California Extreme. You guys talking about Klax and Major Havoc like they're relics from a different past. I'm 32 and you guys are making me feel old. When I was a kid, there was a Major Havoc at the Albertsons. Man, I thought the game was awesome. I wish I'd gone up north to check it out. Ryan. This guy writes in fairly frequently. I actually just basically had very little contact with arcades. Missed out on kind of that whole side of things. That's never somewhere my parents would have taken
me. Sort of.
I don't think there was an
arcade. And they didn't have it at the Albertsons.
20 or 30 mile radius of my house.
Really?
I mean,
there was one that I went to reasonably frequently, but it was sort of a generation past a lot of the games at California Extreme.
Yeah.
And that was only because that was when I found out that it existed. I think for all of us, just sort of by chance, us playing video games and the sort of rise and fall of arcades never intersected, not like temporally, but just we just didn't go to arcades.
I actually liked, I mean, like, there were a few times in my life when I went to an arcade.
Right,
like,
and it's always,
I'm
like,
at a hotel
awesome.
In Vegas. Right. Whoa, an arcade!
Yeah,
or like, I was on a cruise ship once, and I don't think I left the arcade on the cruise ship, which it was just like an awful arcade. It was just a couple of machines, but I was always sort of like, it was that weird kind of mythical place where there were a lot of games in one place.
Right.
Like, oh, people are playing games in public.
I also get the feeling that maybe we just had the sort of parents that were not into going to arcades and spending their money on them.
My parents were,
I
played more arcade games at the doctor's office than anywhere else because they had one of those table style cabinets that had both Galaga and Pac-Man.
Right.
If you guys have ever seen those, like you've actually sat down it.
I
played the shit out of those at the doctor's office. I loved going to the doctor's office for just, you know, not if I was genuinely sick, but for stupid checkups and stuff. It was great because I got to play Galaga.
Yeah.
I loved that game.
Yeah. The ANW in my town had a Super Pac-Man tabletop, which is kind of hilarious.
And then the movie theater near me had that. There wasn't an arcade anywhere near where I lived. There was a...
There were machines.
About 20 miles away or more, there was a Wonderland, which was like, you go in there and you pay a couple dollars and then all the machines are only a nickel. And my friends all went to that all the time, but I could only, I actually didn't really go to that until we were all 16 and could drive there ourselves. So I never, as a kid, my parents would never have taken me somewhere like that. So I don't know. I just kind of missed out on that.
But,
and that actually was an interesting aspect of California Extreme for me is that I didn't see that stuff the first time around.
Yeah.
Dogby writes, this is a weird one, but what exo-genre qualities do you find appealing in some genres or even just in some games? For example, I really like StarCraft because it's very much like a great fighting game. Very balanced games are fast and it's very competitive. See, the only competitive games are fighting games, guys. he continues, or another example, you could very easily say during a great deathmatch, FPS like Quake 3 is good because of its strategy game qualities. Resource management, dominating health, armor, weapons, and ammo, and the build orders, your path around the map, how you start on each respawn.
I like that a strategy game is good because it's like a fighting game, and then a first-person shooter is good because it's like a strategy game.
Yeah.
It's pretty extreme.
It's meta. Yeah.
But then Street Fighter is good because of the sort of weapons management and sort of, you know,
this is probably RPG really weird. Stuff. It's good because it's like the Guitar cutscenes. Hero. This is probably really weird, and it's something like that just came to me lately. The StarCraft one was something someone brought up to me about a year ago, and it's what got me to try fighting games, Street Fighter 2 HD Remix being my first real fighter ever. Now I love fighting games, and I see all the parallels from that example. P.S. I made up the term exogenre. Do you like it? Check one. Yes, no.
Yeah.
Good job. Do you guys have any examples off the top of your head? I've definitely had that feeling before. I'm trying to think of... I should have thought about this ahead of time.
Yeah.
But I do know what he means. Burnout Revenge is almost more like an action game than a racer in a lot of ways. Wow. I mean, the racing is incredibly forgiving. I mean, a lot more of it is just about being really aggressive to
the
guys near you and dodging them and trying to just shunt them out. I mean, it's got a lot of the fundamental properties of a racing game, the speed and the handling that make it really fun. But it's such little emphasis is placed on actual intricate driving that that a lot of the appeal comes from other areas, and that works really well.
Like how Dr. Mario isn't a medical simulator?
Right, exactly.
What?
Dr. Mario is actually more like Tetris. It's funny how they sneak that in there while making it seem like it's all about filling prescriptions. Very clever.
Yeah. A lot of games like that, though. I mean...
Yeah.
Well, just on your shelf, World in Conflict is sort of like that. Where it's far more action-y than a...
Yeah.
Typical RTS.
It's
actually like Battlefield is what it feels like. I mean, you have spawn rates and things like that. So yeah, I mean, there's a sort of a cross pollination there.
Cool.
And some puzzling.
Puzzling. Thanks, Jake. Eric Jornas, and there's accents in this, so I'm probably still getting it wrong, writes, hey, Eric the Swede here. Thought you might want to take a look at this game, and then he links to the trailer for the Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet game. Have you guys seen the trailer for that?
Trailer.
Yeah.
Shadow Planet.
Yeah.
Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet.
Yeah. Nah. It's a 2D platformer thing. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah. A flying spaceshipy type thing that does all sorts of things to stuff.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. How does that pitch almost
reminds me of Blueberry Garden, maybe with like a little less whimsical and, you know.
Yeah, it seems like there's been this sort of... was it at the IGF last year that there were two games that took place entirely in silhouette with color in the background?
Right. Yeah.
Was this one of them, or is this a
different? No. I don't think
this is the third one in the collection of indie platformers that take place entirely with silhouette art.
Yeah.
I can't remember the names of any of them. I just remember they'd come up back to back in the awards a couple times.
Right.
Like, hey,
there it is.
You're doing different things with the same aesthetic, or maybe the same thing. I can't tell.
Yeah.
Probably different things.
Yeah.
Those indie games.
This guy also had a pretty good subject line. It is, hello, a reckless disregard for email subjects. So our readers love this joke. And so do we. Peter Moran I don't know what to make of this email. It confuses me. He writes, Mr. Thumb, Idle Thumbs Incorporated, secret location on the internet. Dear Mr. Thumb or Thumbs, this is a long email. I don't know if I can read the whole thing, but he writes, I've sent you this most urgent email to let you know of a world exclusive. What is this hopefully captivating and awe-inspiring reveal that will most likely make your appendages fall off, including your passive thumbs? Well, it, of course, the never revealed on the internet, Kellogg's Guitar Hero Fruit Rolls. Yes, now all you crazy mad Guitar Hero fans can snack down upon the glorious red strip of artificially processed fruit roll. That is, the strawberry whammy Guitar Hero Fruit Roll. He goes on for a while, has some IGN quotes. He says, to further solidify my point, I will show you one of the only pictures of said Guitar Hero Fruit Rolls, of which are included in the attached file. As a final word, you may lift the embargo anytime after the release of Idle Thumbs episode 35. So here we go. I guess we'll include this picture on the Idle Thumbs downloadable content thread on the forums. He has what looks to be a quite real picture of Guitar Hero Fruit Rolls, strawberry whammy flavor. I don't know what to make of this.
These either already exist or... this is weird, or this has been sent to every other podcast, so right. Get ready on the Bombcast to hear them talking about this, or to hear them not talking about it, because this isn't because the Zodiac Killer, this is a fucking fruit roll of Guitar Hero marketing.
Yeah, this is super hilarious. Yeah, but this guy's written into us before, actually, with regular emails.
Planting the seeds.
So yeah, right.
Yeah.
The ultimate this, the Guitar Hero fruit roll bomb.
Yeah.
Dropped.
So I'll put the email up too, I guess, because I skipped some of it because it's long. So there's that. I think that's all we got. That's the show. Oh, Jake, are you sad to be done or happy? You're just grumbling. You're just an old man.
Games.
All right. Well, Jake and I will be at Comic-Con next week or this week.
This week? Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
In the future.
Some of us might already be there.
Yep. I'm there right now. Weird. So we'll have some stuff to talk to you. There's actually been a lot of publishers coming to Comic-Con this year, so
there should including be some Telltale games.
Yeah. All right, guys.
And Idle Thumbs games.
Yeah. Talk to you next week.
Disconnecting the Wii Motion Plus accessory. First, slide the lock switch down. While pressing the buttons on both sides, pull the accessory straight out of the Wii remote controller and slide the jacket down and away. Pull the wrist strap through the hole and then remove the controller from the jacket. Your Wii Motion Plus accessory is now disconnected. Be sure to place your Wii remote back into its original jacket. Connecting a Nunchuck controller to the Wii Motion Plus accessory. You'll need your Nunchuck controller and a Wii remote connected to Wii Motion Plus. Use your fingers to grip both sides of the cover and remove it. Now insert the Nunchuck connector plug. Turn the controller over and be sure to pass the cord under the hook. Next, insert the tab to secure the cover in place. Now you're ready to use your controller. If your Wii Motion Plus accessory isn't accurately following your motions, follow these simple steps. Place the Wii remote with Wii Motion Plus face down on a table or other stable surface. Keep it still and wait for a few seconds. Wii Motion Plus will calibrate automatically. If you're still having problems, please refer to the Wii Motion Plus Operations Manual or the Wii Operations Manual.
That would be amazing if we were Brian Crescented by this.
I know. I actually have...
I could have. I picked this fucking no-name podcast.
I thought it'd be funny to feed them some Guitar Hero rolls.
I have exclusive food news, too, actually. I could...
All right, well, don't spoil it now.
Don't spoil that food. Try.